Welcome. We continue in The Mother, Chapter 6. Four great aspects of the Mother. Four of her leading powers and personalities have stood in front in her guidance of this universe and in her dealings with the terrestrial play. One is her personality of calm wideness and comprehending wisdom and tranquil benignity and inexhaustible compassion and sovereign and surpassing majesty and all-ruling greatness. Another embodies her power of splendid strength and irresistible passion, her warrior mood, her overwhelming will, her impetuous swiftness and world-shaking force. A third is vivid and sweet and wonderful, with her deep secret of beauty and harmony and fine rhythm, her intricate and subtle opulence, her compelling attraction and captivating grace. The fourth is equipped with her close and profound capacity of intimate knowledge and careful, flawless work and quiet and exact perfection in all things. Wisdom, strength, harmony, perfection are their several attributes, and it is these powers that they bring with them into the world, manifest in a human disguise in their vibhutis, and shall found in the divine degree of their ascension in those who can open their earthly nature to the direct and living influence of the Mother. To the four, we give the four great names, Maheshwari, Mahakali, Mahalakshmi, Mahasaraswati. Imperial Maheshwari is seated in the wideness above the thinking mind and will, and sublimates and greatens them into wisdom and largeness, or floods with a splendor beyond them. For she is the mighty and wise one who opens us to the supramental infinities and the cosmic vastness, to the grandeur of the supreme light, to a treasure house of miraculous knowledge, to the measureless movement of the Mother's eternal forces. Tranquil is she and wonderful, great and calm forever. Nothing can move her because all wisdom is in her. Nothing is hidden from her that she chooses to know. She comprehends all things and all beings and their nature, and what moves them, and the law of the world and its times, and how all was and is and must be. A strength is in her that meets everything and masters, and none can prevail in the end against her vast and tangible wisdom and high tranquil power. Equal, patient, and unalterable in her will, she deals with men according to their nature and with things and happenings according to their force and the truth that is in them. Partiality she has none, but she follows the decrees of the Supreme, and some she raises up, and some she casts down or puts away from her into the darkness. To the wise, she gives a greater and more luminous wisdom. Those that have vision, she admits to her counsels. On the hostile, she imposes the consequence of their hostility. The ignorant and foolish, she leads according to their blindness. In each man, she answers and handles the different elements of his nature, according to their need and their urge and the return they call for, puts on them the required pressure, or leaves them to their cherished liberty to prosper in the ways of the ignorance or to perish. for she is above all, bound by nothing, attached to nothing in the universe. Yet has she more than any other the heart of the universal mother, for her compassion is endless and inexhaustible. All are to her eyes her children and portions of the One, even the Asura and Rakshasa and Pishacha, and those that are revolted and hostile. Even her rejections are only a postponement. Even her punishments are a grace. But her compassion does not blind her wisdom or turn her action from the course decreed. For the truth of things is her one concern, knowledge her center of power, and to build our soul and our nature into the divine truth, her mission and her labor. So, four great aspects. Four leading powers and personalities. We've spoken about the Devi Mahatmya, and we'll come back to that. Perhaps the oldest sustained hymn to the Divine Mother, recorded somewhere around the 5th century CE. But let's stay with Sri Aurobindo. When he came to Pondicherry in 1910, soon thereafter, he began to record in a journal what he came to call his record of yoga. Later, also called it a journal of yoga. We title it by the first assignation he gave it. Therein, as early as 1912, he speaks of these four distinct goddess powers as they worked to build his nature into a figure of yogic strength and knowledge, felicity and perfection in its action. And he noted how they worked with each other, how some combinations were more essential for the attainment he was seeking. For instance, the energy of Mahakali when it worked with Mahasaraswati, with the combination of an irresistible force and an insistence on perfection, that things could be changed, set, and not lost again. Otherwise, things were a little malleable. So the play of these goddess forces were already in his mind. He writes this chapter in 1927. It's published in 1928. But we also see him bring these goddess powers forward in his treatment of the synthesis of yoga, in the section on the yoga of self-perfection, where he is beginning to unroll his own program, what he called the Sapta Chatushtaya, the seven quadrants. And as he described them chapter after chapter, eventually he came to a section, I think it is chapter 66, where he titled it Faith and the Shakti. I think it's worth reading from that for a moment, if I may. It has practical application for us and also allows us to hear. His mellifluous sentences recorded, you know, in 1920, years before he was able to compose the book The Mother. The faith in the divine Shakti must be always at the back of our strength, and when she becomes manifest, it must be or grow implicit and complete. There is nothing that is impossible to her who is the conscious power and universal goddess, all creative from eternity and armed with the Spirit's omnipotence. All knowledge, all strengths, all triumph and victory, all skill and works are in her hands, and they are full of the treasures of the Spirit and of all perfections and siddhis. She is Maheshwari, goddess of the supreme knowledge, and brings to us her vision for all kinds and widenesses of truth, her rectitude of the spiritual will, the calm and passion of her supramental largeness, her felicity of illumination. She is Mahakali, goddess of the supreme strength, and with her are all mights and spiritual force and severest austerity of tapas and swiftness to the battle and the victory and the laughter, the atahasya, that makes light of defeat and death and the powers of the ignorance. She is Mahalakshmi, the goddess of the supreme love and delight, and her gifts are the Spirit's grace and the charm and beauty of the Ananda and protection and every divine and human blessing. She is Mahasaraswati, the goddess of divine skill and of the works of the Spirit, and hers is the yoga that is skill in works, yoga karmasu kaushalam. And the utilities of divine knowledge and the self-application of the Spirit to life and the happiness of its harmonies. And in all her powers and forms, she carries with her the supreme sense of the masteries of the eternal Ishwari, a rapid and divine capacity for all kinds of action that may be demanded from the instrument. Oneness, a participating sympathy, a free identity with all energies and all beings, and therefore a spontaneous and fruitful harmony with all the divine will in the universe. The intimate feeling of her presence and her powers, and the satisfied assent of all our being to her workings in and around it, is the last perfection of faith in the Shakti. So you see how concordant what he wrote in 1920 is with what he wrote in 1927. It's worth noting, too, of course, that with these four goddesses, we have figures of knowledge and power, harmony and perfection and work. But these also figure in how a perfect society comes into play. Because these goddess powers, as they are typified in the cosmos, are also typified in the individual and in the social extension of the individual into the larger communal life. So all these powers are nascent in us. None are absent. One may take prominent view. Just as in society, there may be some order within it where knowledge is manifest, another where power is exhibited, another where wealth and prosperity and beauty are produced, another which insists on the perfection of work. And in fact, Sri Aurobindo made notes as early as 1914-1915, connecting the social order with the play of these goddesses in a direct way, so that Maheshwari is reflected in the ancient Indian society as the class of the Brahmins, those who kept the sacred word, which was full of power and knowledge. And then Mahakali would express herself in the Kshatriya, who would deal with this founding and the maintenance of a righteous kingdom and were there for protection, not so much for conquest. And the third, of course, Mahalakshmi, would be there present and powerfully active in the Vaishya class, who was there to produce wealth, to give the fine things in life, to give the aesthetic flush to the experience of existence. And of course, Mahasaraswati would be there to act in perfect utility, in the smallest detail, in that final class of the human structure in the Aryan order. So all four were representative of the Divine Mother in one form or the other. And just so, all four are representative in us. They exist in us and ask to be invoked through our thought, through our action, through our sincerity. And as he says in the Synthesis of Yoga, through our faith. Faith, an inherent knowledge of the soul that knows that despite the resistance of obscurities and limitations, that the goal will be secured. So, whether or not these four have assumed in mythology and in philosophy thousands of years ago prominent positions, it is his inner experience that is on record here. The large capacity of Maheshwari governs the cosmos. Mahakali delivers the decisive awakening and blow when necessary. Mahalakshmi is she who generates the beauty and the wealth of the world. And Mahasaraswati works out in detail the mission of the cosmos in each individual, in each line of force. Maheshwari, we meet in the Devi Mahatmya. Sri Aurobindo draws our attention away from the mythological placement and looks at things in the true cosmological sense. Where is she in relationship to the universe? He's described before how the Supreme Mother is transcendent, also universal. He places Maheshwari above the mind. He says here, above the thinking mind and will. But by implication from what he's written before, she stands in that region, in the superconscient, bridging what connects the supramental light to the overmental light, which then pours down into the world. So her real station is overmental. And because she sees vastly and is open to the splendors of the supramental, she is capable of governing the universe in a way that holding all within her, she nevertheless conducts each process and each of the universal acts in a way that leads ultimately to the victory that she desires and which the Supreme insists upon. The Supreme, in Sri Aurobindo's book, The Mother, is she. So, Maheshwari is not that Supreme Mother, but is representing that power of the transcendence, stationed above the cosmos, suzerain of the cosmos. Because she is vast, whatever occurs in the universe occurs within her being, but there is no event that can occur in her cosmic stature which would shake her. Nothing can move her like that. And her vision, based in knowledge, because she is open to that supramental light, she is, in a sense, the very faculty of sight, is unblinking, and she sees deeply. I think it's very interesting here that she is not simply light, not simply knowledge, but she has a strength. The strength is in her that meets everything and masters, and nothing can prevail against her. Because in that intangible wisdom that she has, she foresees already the act of the person before them. She knows already the end of what will be the play. So she is vast. She is universal. Vishwarupa, the universe is her form. She is calm, unmoved, samatha. Cosmic in action, but undisturbed by the action she conducts. Like we see in the figure of Nataraja, who, whirling this cosmos into being and into destruction, has always this benign, felicitous expression on his face with his eyes closed, because he's never lost his inner poise, regardless of the dance and the drama. And she, Maheshwari, is the same way. And in fact, of course, Maheshwari in mythology is often interpreted as that Shakti of which Shiva is connected, to which Shiva is connected. No partiality. Treating all according to the truth of the moment, what it is that they want. She does not insist. If you wish to be ignorant, if you wish to live in darkness, she'll let you choose. The fruit that comes to you will awaken you. And you will eventually choose to do better. If you choose wisdom, she'll greaten your wisdom. Two, when we say that she puts someone away into the darkness, that is according to their choice. It is not her will that they be dark, but she sees into a being what is their true proclivity, what is their true nature, their true ask, and she answers that. Above all, transcendent, bound by nothing, because, again, she has not lost her inner vision, attached to nothing, but endless in her compassion, because she sees no other. As she says in the Devi Mahatmya, what else exists but me? Show me the second. Only I am. So those many beings that we think of as being hostile and opposed to the progress of the divine, she has not given up on them. He mentions here the Asura, the being of the mentalized vital, the Rakshasa, the being of the middle vital, and the Pishacha, the being of the lower vital, which seem demonic to us because they have turned away from light, turned away from integrity of being, and are pursuing a dark path. She never gives up on them, and she insists on bringing them back. And if they want to wrestle her, if they want to come into contact with her in a measure of force, then so she will meet them. And in fact, the whole of the Devi Mahatmya records three episodes where they try to subdue and defeat the great goddess, which is, of course, impossible. They're foredoomed. The four play throughout the Devi Mahatmya, but that idea of the transcendence, which Maheshwari represents, leaning from the cosmic back into that transcendence, is suggested in some of the passages of the Devi Mahatmya. To translate, you are the insight, Medhasi, by which the essence of the scriptures is known. The scriptures are the embodiment of knowledge. But what is it that makes them true and real? It is the insight. It is the knowledge of a supreme truth behind. And she is that. You are Durga. Who is Durga? Durga means the one who is difficult. To climb to her consciousness requires heroic effort. It requires supreme tapasya. You are Durga. But look what she does. The difficult. The boat which takes men across the difficult ocean of worldly life, devoid of attachment. So she delivers you as your vehicle. You may think that you're going on your own. Really, you're traveling with her speed, in her being, towards a foreordained end. He calls her that bridge to the supramental infinities, to the grandeur of the supreme light, Param Jyoti, to a treasure house of miraculous knowledge, the measureless movement of the Mother's eternal forces. So she is clearly in that realm above, that golden bridge, as Sri Aurobindo says in Savitri, that wonderful fire that connects the supernals to what seems to us to be the mundane existence, the spoiled existence of a world which is disillusioned and disappointed in every way. No. Imminent within this world is her glory, is her knowledge. And the whole point of the cosmic manifestation is to move from the nadir, from what seems to be inconscient, without surrendering the nama and the rupa, without giving up the name and the form, to a fulfillment of what is that liquid and immaculate grace here in our physique. We, the individual, and individual, and individual, as we awaken to the power of the goddess within us and connect in a natural way with oneness with each other can create a society which is founded not on division and desire, but on the manifestation of the inherent truth of our nature. So these four goddesses, led and marshaled in their various powers by Maheshwari, are the very answer that we're seeking. To find the force of the Divine Mother within, in your meditation, and then to pronounce it in your thought and your word, and to live it in your action, is that very thing which will lead to a greater world. Because when you are absent of desire, but you act from that will that is born from your soul within, that spark of her fire, you can only be led from light to greater light. So, challenge yourself less to answer the riddles of life and live from the soul. Find the harmony within. It will solve the perplexities of the mind. It will ease the hunger in the belly. And you will live a simple, rich life, manifesting the glory that you find within. We'll go forward with Mahakali next time when we meet. I think I'd like to read for you a section from Savitri. Now, we've already read the section on Durga, so I'm not going to repeat that. It would be appropriate. But tonight I'm going to read from Book 2, The Book of the Traveler of the Worlds, Canto 15, The Kingdoms of the Greater Knowledge. Out of the neutral silence of his soul, he passed to its fields of puissance and of calm, and saw the powers that stand above the world, traversed the realms of the supreme idea, and sought the summit of created things and the almighty source of cosmic change. There, knowledge called him to her mystic peaks, where thought is held in a vast internal sense, and feeling swims across a sea of peace, and vision climbs beyond the reach of time. An equal of the first creator seers, accompanied by an all-revealing light, he moved through regions of transcendent truth, inward, immense, innumerably one. There, distance was his own huge spirit's extent, delivered from the fictions of the mind. Time's triple dividing step baffled no more. Its inevitable and continuous stream, the long flow of its manifesting course, was held in spirit's single wide regard. A universal beauty showed its face. The invisible deep-fraught significances, here sheltered behind form's insensible screen, uncovered to him their deathless harmony and the key to the wonder book of common things. In their uniting law stood up revealed the multiple measures of the upbuilding force, the lines of the world geometer's technique, the enchantments that uphold the cosmic web, and the magic underlying simple shapes. on peaks where silence listens with still heart to the rhythmic meters of the rolling worlds, he served the sessions of the triple fire. On the rim of two continents of slumber and trance, he heard the ever-unspoken reality's voice awaken revelation's mystic cry, the birthplace found of the sudden infallible word, and lived in the rays of an intuitive sun. Absolved from the ligaments of death and sleep, he rode the lightning seas of cosmic mind and crossed the ocean of original sound. On the last step to the supernal birth, he trod along extinction's narrow edge, near the high verges of eternity, and mounted the gold ridge of the world dream between the Slayer and the Savior fires. The belt he reached of the unchanging truth met borders of the inexpressible light and thrilled with the presence of the ineffable. Above him he saw the flaming hierarchies, the wings that fold around created space, the sun-eyed guardians and the golden sphinx, and the tiered plains and the immutable lords. A wisdom waiting on omniscience sat voiceless in a vast passivity. It judged not, measured not, nor strove to know, but listened for the veiled all-seeing thought and the burden of a calm transcendent voice. He had reached the top of all that can be known. His sight surpassed creation's head and base. Ablaze, the triple heavens revealed their suns. The obscure abyss exposed its monstrous rule. All but the ultimate mystery was his field. Almost the unknowable disclosed its rim. His self's infinities began to emerge. The hidden universes cried to him. Eternities called to eternities, sending their speechless message still remote. Arisen from the marvel of the depths, and burning from the superconscious heights, and sweeping in great horizontal gyres, a million energies joined and were the one. All flowed immeasurably to one sea. All living forms became its atom homes. A panergy that harmonized all life held now existence in its vast control. A portion of that majesty he was made. At will, he lived in the unoblivious ray. A good place to end. Namaste, Jai Ma.